Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. Up in the captain's chair on the magical Isle of Vashon once again, having returned from my last voyage to be with some of Captain Joe's people in the Midwest. It is a beautiful and sunny day here on the magical Isle of Vashon, and my greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people on the Magical Isle, and in particular those who are doing the battle preps, what were called the battle preps back in the days when we did refresher training with the Navy at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Everybody who is getting ready for the 4th of July celebration, of which your captain is one, because this year, after having passed it last year for good and sufficient reason, I am once again having an all-family and friends of family rank 4th of July at Captain's Quarters, and the bookings are already coming in. When I have a 4th of July or other big all-family gathering, and it is not in deep winter, the rule is that you either bring and use a tent or a vehicle that has suitable accommodation therein. And already I am getting signals. One came just a little while ago from my daughter Gina and her husband Bob, that they are coming and they are going to be setting up their van, which has bunks and a little galley, and they're going to be setting up on Captain Joe's property. So my greetings, therefore, go out to all of Captain Joe's people, especially those on the Magical Isle, who are getting ready for the 4th of July. Anyone who comes to Captain's Quarters, as you get to the top of my driveway, you will see that while I was away, some eager and enthusiastic flag putters, uppers, have installed bunting and flags along the rail at the top of my property so that there'll be no mistake as to where you're going. And at first I didn't know who had done this, but I had a suspicion, and I sent out a signal, and sure enough, my suspicions were confirmed. And so many thanks to all of those from my road family who did indeed put up the flags for the 4th of July. The binnacle list this week is a sad one. And it's a sad one because I have a couple of crossings of the bar to report, and also a couple of people who are doing better, but still not quite there. The crossings of the bar came to me from my friend and colleague, John, J-O-N, who is also my eager supplier of news articles, and especially about the Great Lakes. And John and I had a conversation yesterday in which we talked about the two crossings that had to do with the Coast Guard cutter Storrs. Storrs, of course, was the one of the ships that made the first circumnavigation of the North American continent in 1957. And the one of the people who has crossed his bar was a Chuck Schnitzer, who was one of the people that were in that crew and who had been a stalwart with the Storrs and circumnavigation reunions that we've had a couple of times that John has put together. So my condolences and best wishes to the Schnitzer family. He was a second-class storekeeper, and one of the jobs of a storekeeper was to help keep the galley supplied, and so far as I know, he was not only a second-class storekeeper, but also a good one, and one of the ones who also helped to take care of pay records. The other one was one which was a little bit of a surprise to me, and that was the captain in Storrs, Captain Phil Shearer. And it was a surprise to me because he was younger, many academy classes junior to me, and he was also the captain in Storrs when she earned the right to wear the gold hull numbers. That means that she was the queen of the fleet. That means that she was the oldest Coast Guard cutter in commission, and Captain Shearer was her commanding officer at the time that she earned that. So to both of those families, go out our heartfelt sympathy and condolences, and especially from Captain Joe. I never sailed in Storrs, but I am related to her through the fact that she was not only an extension of the 180-foot buoy tenders and was herself capable of working aids to navigation, but she was also very sturdy and strong and was a icebreaker in the, not in the full icebreaker capability sense, but had worked in the ice. There's some wonderful pictures of her in that circumnavigation mission in which she was breaking out the other two, which were indeed 180-foot buoy tenders, Spar and Bramble. And there's some great photographs of her working in the ice. So the other people, my friend David, who I was with last week, is slowly getting better. And all the other of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list, we want them to get better quickly, to return to full duty. And in my own case, my update on that is that tomorrow I meet with the ever-lovely Vivian, my Vietnamese registered nurse, who is also the expert now at both pulling and putting back in the Foley tubes. If we have to do that, we're going to try again tomorrow and see how well I do. The signs are not good, or they're not optimistic, but one never knows what a good RON can produce in terms of more capability in that regard. During my trip to the Midwest, I did indeed have a coupling failure, and when those happen, they require immediate corrective maintenance on the part of the captain, and it can get pretty intense. All of those things, though, are full of optimism on my part, And next week, I will report back as to how well I do, and hopefully I will also be able to report that people like Captain O'Brien are on the full road to recovery, and all of the others of Captain Joe's people who remain firmly attached to the binnacle list. It's time for us to move on. Move on and move out and move to full, return to full duty. In nautical and maritime news, a sad one also, because you all will recall that I reported on the car carrier Morning Midas that was on fire off the coast of, or south of the Aleutians in international waters, but still under the search and rescue jurisdiction of the Coast Guard, and in particular had been overflown several times by aircraft from the air station at Kodiak. Morning Midas sank on the 23rd of June, and she was under the Liberian flag. She was carrying over 3,000 vehicles, and she had, including 65 fully electric vehicles and over almost 700 hybrid vehicles. That's a lot of lithium ion batteries that went down with her. The question to me is, and it's not yet been reported in any of the sources to which I plug in every week before I do this broadcast. What is interesting to me is that nobody has characterized the reason why she sank. And I'm led to wonder whether or not she was allowed to sink on purpose. The lithium ion batteries do not extinguish with water. They have to be allowed to burn out. And so the question is, was in fact she allowed to burn out? Not allowed to burn out, but was allowed to sink on purpose. I await with barely concealed anticipation the report on that, and when I know what the answer is, I will report back to all of Captain Joe's people, because the loss and sinking of a ship, even one as unattractive in her physical appearance as car carriers are, is always a loss to me when a ship sinks. So I will be following that one up and will let everybody know. On Saturday, here on the magical Isle of Vashon, we're going to have the annual low tide celebration. I have headed up this particular event for many years now, and we, of course, had to secure it during the virus time. Last year we had it. It was a huge success last year, and this year we are expecting that it will be an even bigger success. And we measure success not only by the number of people who appear, but by the ability of all of the participants to provide a great educational and training experience. We have trained beach naturalists that take people out onto the beach. We have the lowest tide that we can organize on a weekend. And this year, people will be able to march in a smart, seaman-like, and semper paratus fashion about halfway across. Not really quite that far. For one thing, out in the middle, it is about 100 fathoms deep. Everybody remembers how much a fathom is. I know that all of Captain Joe's people know how much a fathom is. But I had people in my tour groups over the weekend, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about in a minute, who, when I say it is 100 fathoms deep out there in the middle right out there by the traffic separation scheme buoy, expressions of puzzlement appear. No, Captain Joe, I don't know how much a fathom is. And I explained that it is part of the ancient measurement system that we still use in this country because America is the least metricated country in the entire developed world. And we still use that system. We use the system that includes feet and hands, for those of you who are horse people like Captain O'Brien. And we still use the measurements that are associated with that, and the fathom is one of those. It is a man's arm span or 6 feet. So on low tide celebration, we'll be able to get pretty close to that 100-fathom mark out there in the middle. And it is the time when we are able to show people the animals that they can see only when the tide is at its lowest. So we start at 11 o'clock. There are going to be a number of exhibits along with the ability to go out onto the tide flats at the low tide. And I hope that many of you who listen to this broadcast and who have not made your plans for Saturday, come starting at 11. We go until about, the advertised end is 3 o'clock. The lowest tide is right around noon. But I expect that I'll be out there for the entire afternoon because there'll be a lot of people that will stay and we'll want tours of the lighthouse. We're still not able to take people to the top of the tower. And when we're able to do that, watch for that announcement on the Vashon Park District website, vashonparks.org. In the South China Sea, the Chinese Coast Guard continues to agitate and continues to harass the, in particular around the area called the Scarborough Shoal down in the South China Sea. And the maritime press has picked up the word cutter to describe Chinese Coast Guard ships. And I, whenever I see that, I point out that the word cutter is attached only to U.S. Coast Guard cutters. And that's because the type of sailing vessel that we used in 1790 when the Revenue Cutter Service was established were a type of vessel called a cutter. And we've continued that tradition today. The Chinese Coast Guard, even the Canadian Coast Guard, has no such tradition. And so the word cutter is not properly applied to those ships. But over the years, the word cutter has attached itself to other Coast Guards, just like the stripe on the hull has attached itself to other Coast Guards. But it came from us. The word cutter came from us, belongs to us. And so Coast Guard, U.S. Coast Guard ships remain today called cutters. Those that are over 65 feet in length, have a permanent crew, and have a name. Not to the Chinese Coast Guard. But they're busy out there. They've been using water cannons in their latest foray against the Philippine Coast Guard. And if they're not careful, there's going to be an international incident and there's going to be some serious trouble. I remain convinced that the senior Coast Guard captain out there should get all of those ships together, all of those Coast Guards together. Ours, the Philippine Coast Guard, the Chinese Coast Guard, and have a come-to-the-captain session in which they all agree that they're not going to continue to borax each other. It's bad seamanship. It's bad maritime manners, and it's unnecessary. And that's the way that if I were the U.S. Coast Guard cutter captain out there, that's the way I would deal with it. I would invite all of the other captains to come and join me in my cabin, and we would talk it all out. The Sunday tours on this last Sunday were a particularly interesting group of people. As often is the case, we went from talking about lighthouses to talking about a number of different other subjects. One of them was a family that was trying to decide how they should handle a situation with an aged parent. And I told the story about bringing my own mother out here to the magical Isle of Vashon from Virginia. And the reasons why I did that, how we made it all work, including bringing out her two orange cats, which it ended up she could not handle. And I ended up with them, and that was my first exposure to orange cats. And, of course, now I have Sailor, who is my XO in residence. I have other XOs out there, of course. And so we had a discussion about that. And we had a group that wanted to talk about starting businesses, and I told the story about my friend Anastasia and my friend Megan, both of whom have started their own businesses as well as keeping up with their other activities. And then we got to talking about what people have done with their lives after retirement. And, of course, one of the things that we talked about was what I had done with my life after so-called retirement from the service. I tell these things because I hope and I believe that each one of these families left feeling a little bit better about themselves and about the world in which we all live. That's my mission with this broadcast. And one of the things that came out of this was the lighthouse poster that can only be gotten here on the Magical Isle at Point Robinson and the stamp that I put on it. And we talked about lighthouses, and we talked about how I have used the Point Robinson Lighthouse to be a part of my life after a retirement. So I think and believe, and I may be deceiving myself because sometimes I do that, that in fact, they came away with some thoughts and some ideas about what they might want to do in their retirement, what they might want to do with their elderly parent who can no longer handle, and in this case it was a mother, could no longer handle living alone and on her own. And I felt then and feel now as I describe this today, that in fact they did in fact come away feeling like they had some other ideas that they could maybe bring into play. Today is Darwin College at the University of Cambridge Giving Day. I was the recipient of a flood of messages from Darwin College, and all of Captain Joe's people here on know that I am a graduate of the University of Cambridge. I had acquired my master's degree when I was 61 after some thinking on the part of the acceptance committee at Scott Polar Research Institute that they might not want me to come. And they felt that because there was some discussion in the group, in the acceptance committee, that maybe this captain would not become a part of the Cambridge Way, because after all, captains have their own ideas and they have their own way of doing things, and they were certainly right about that. But the fact is that I was accepted, that Cambridge became my intellectual home. And when you are a member of the University of Cambridge, you belong not only to the university, but you must belong to one of the 31 colleges, and you must belong to one of the departments. So my department is Scott Poer Research Institute, where I also manage the construction of the Shackleton Memorial Library. And I am a member of Darwin College. During my time in residence at the University of Cambridge and my membership, which remains my membership for life, Darwin does not let up on the sending of their members' requests for donations, and I responded to that today. And when I responded to that with a maybe not so significant donation, but in any case, I did send them a little bit of money, and I wrote in the comments section that went with the whole idea of sending them money, I reminded them that one of the things that I did when I was there was that I was Father Christmas. And I was Father Christmas for the annual Christmas party, and I was Father Christmas with an American accent. It's really interesting because Darwin, first of all, has only graduate students, no undergraduates. And secondly, many of the graduate students are married and have children. So I got suited up as Father Christmas, the uniform of the day, a little bit different from being Santa in this country. And I am sitting in the chair, not the captain's chair, but the Father Christmas chair. And as children came up, and I, of course, always like to talk in particular to children. And so there were children from probably 45 different countries. And Father Christmas with a clearly American accent. It was a great day, one that I would certainly not have wanted to miss. And Mary R. was my helper in getting suited up. And after it was over and I had returned to the Father Christmas robing room and had returned to my civilian attire, she remarked on what a great event it was. And she said, "Joseph, you should have seen the expression on some of those children's faces. After they had been with you and had turned around, you would seeing the stern of them." She didn't put it that way, but you were seeing them as they had turned around, the expressions on their faces after they had had their time with Father Christmas. Enriched my life, Darwin College enriched my life and continues to do so today. And the memory of being Father Christmas to all of those children is as fresh today as it was on the day that I actually did it. The warning that I'm giving today is that I have just also, along with being flooded with requests for contributions from Darwin College, I've also been flooded with notifications from the Department of Motor Vehicles that if I do not pay my tolls, that I am about ready to lose my privilege of driving a motor vehicle in the state of Washington. None of these are real. Take my word for it. You have my hand on it. None of these are real. Send them to the Deep Six. Don't send them any money. And I can assure you that and this comes also from Captain O'Brien, who's sitting across from me, and he's nodding, yes, these are not real. And he is also sending me a signal I know his signals pretty clearly by now. He's sending me a signal saying that he has also gotten them. And I just got a thumbs up from him on that. So this book comes from both of your captains, from Captain O'Brien and from Captain Joe. These are not real. Don't send them any money. And finally, I need a little bit of help. Anybody out there who knows who sent me the orchid, which showed up on my front porch while I was away, please send me a signal, CaptainJoe@sentrytel.net, and let me know who it was that sent that orchid, because although I know who put the flags up at Captain's Quarters for the 4th of July and Flag Day, I don't have the foggiest. I looked in the box. I took the box apart. There's a lovely orchid that appeared on my front porch while I was away, and I don't have any idea who sent it. So if anybody can help me on this, I would really appreciate it. Far too quickly, once again, we have come to the end of our time together. As always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And equally, as always, this is your Captain Joe. I remain on station and watching properly.